glad we got out of the house and came downtown for a little culture?
They're butchering the classics. Could that bassoon have come in any more late?
Oh, come on, Homer. There's lasers. You like lasers?
Laser effects mirrored balls. John Williams must be rolling around in his grave.
TheForce.net and RebelScum.com present The Forcecast. And now your hosts, Jason and Pete.
We would be honored if you would join us.
And welcome, welcome, welcome to another Forcecast. This week's episode 4, the week of November 10th, 2006. And it is brought to you by Official Picks. When you're looking for Star Wars autographs and photos, you look no further than Official Picks at aptly named Official Picks. That's Picks with an X, officialpicks.com. I am Jason, and with me always, my good buddy Pete.
Howdy out there, everybody.
And we got a great show this week. A lot of contest news here at the beginning.
Great show if we do say so ourselves.
That's right. We want to congratulate all of our winners over at RebelScum.com for the annual costume contest. You can go over and check it out. Check out photos. The winning submissions at the contest page. And I got to say, these really were amazing. First place adult prize went to an airborne clone trooper costume from Michael, and it's unbelievably authentic, down to the fact that he has the hollow. I should back up and say that one of the prerequisites for this particular contest was that you had to have an action figure in the photo. And he very wisely used an action figure kind of as a hollow image, holographic image. I believe it's Chancellor Palpatine giving him Order 66.
I believe you're right.
Second place was Ryan with his Wat Tambor costume. And then third place, I have to say that I think third place should maybe have been second place. Now, I wasn't one of the judges, neither were you, but that it's an AT-ST. And it's very, very clever with the guy is actually the AT-ST pilot, and then he's got the housing of the of it. And it's amazing. It's amazing. And runner-up was Kathy with a lovely Padme characterization. And the kids, I tell you what, the kids were certainly gave the adults a run for their money. It's a good thing that they had separate categories because they were fantastic. The Lego Stormtrooper was really, really cool. From Luke. Now, are his parents geeks or what?
I believe so.
It is not a happy coincidence that he won a Star Wars costume contest and his name is Luke.
Not in the least.
Third place, Sarah with a great Gonk costume. And I really got to give my thumbs up to the runner-up, Michael, with a Vader. A great Vader costume. And apparently this was a three-way tie for runner-up. And he's complete with scarred-up Sebastian Shaw features.
Almost looks a little creepy.
He does. He looks he looks kind of like a man-child. Like,
yeah. Like all of a sudden...
it's mini-me.
His bottom half stopped growing, but his head matured and then got fried.
Right. So it's kind of a disturbing image, but a great costume. And most humorous went to... Tom with his Darth Vader costume and complete with like some kind of
almost looks like a kilt.
Yeah, it looks like he's maybe working at the Bob Evans or something. And Chris was the best pet with Dog Vader. Check all those out. They're great photos. It's kind of hard to talk about and give a really good description by just talking about it. But
sounded good in my head.
Well, speaking of contests, we have our own contest as a reward to the countless minions of Forcecast listeners. I didn't say millions. I said minions.
And it's not really countless either, because they tell us how many there were. So,
but it's a lot more dramatic to say countless
than to say but the all 340 of you.
All of the ForceCast listeners who helped us out in the month of October by putting us firmly, I'll say, in the top 10 over at Podcast Alley. We have not forgotten you. Here's what we're going to do.
We are going to have you send us an email to podcast@theforce.net with your name and mailing address and phone number. And we are going to ask that you put something in the title, probably top 10 or contest entry or something, so we can identify it right away as being
in the
a contest
subject line, yeah.
entry in the subject and subject line. From there, we're going to take those. We're going to put them all in a hat.
Or actually, your Darth Vader
my
helmet.
My Darth Vader helmet. And we're going to pick 10 winners starting on Monday. We will pick the first winner, and we're going to post the names of the winners in our forums. So check that out. We're only going to announce the contest on the podcast. So people who are just casual observers of theforce.net will not be included in the contest. It's only for you that are hearing this right now and send us an email. And then we've got 10 fabulous prizes from official picks to send out. So we'll pick those and we'll draw your name and let you know what the prize is going to be and announce those winners.
Yeah, feel free to start, you know, sending those emails in anytime. You can start sending them in right now. But please know that we'll start drawing the winners on Monday, November 13th.
And only one entry per person.
Yes, please. And we know there are ways around that. We're not stupid. Well, I'm not. And
wait a minute.
And we know there are ways around it, but please, this is on the honor system. You know, if you end up with two prizes, well, you can just be very proud of yourself that you duped us. But we'd really appreciate it if you do respect. We want to get 10 solid separate winners here. And we can't really give a whole lot of detail as to what the prizes are. But I'll give you a hint that you might get an autograph from a certain princess. That's all I'm going to say. And, you know, wanted to mention this, our good buddy Jay Shepherd, who sent us an email last week saying that we just didn't mention his name enough last week. So Jay Shepherd, Jay Shepherd, Jay Shepherd, Jay Shepherd. How's that? Is that enough?
I think that'll win it for him.
He seems to be taking the initiative in troubleshooting some of the issues that we've been having with iTunes. And apparently, with the release last Friday of iTunes 7.02, it seems to have solved this very strange problem of apparently for some folks, when they start playing their ForceCast on their iPod, it would reset. It would reset the iPod. It would kind of reboot. So apparently that is no longer an issue. So knock on wood, that is solved. So we're glad to hear that. If you have any problems, I will say it again, if you have any problems with downloading or listening to the show, please send us an email. That's podcast@theforce.net. Ah, yes. That sound can only mean one thing. The road to Celebration 4. Every week, Pete and I are going to be counting the weeks to Celebration 4. Pete, where are we at this week?
We've got 28 weeks left until Celebration 4. And if you haven't gone out there and gotten your passes or reserved your hotel, make sure you do that soon because they're going to fill up quick. Our tip for this week is make sure that you take comfortable shoes. Now, I know everybody wants to wear the cool boots or the shoes that go with their outfit, but remember, you're going to be doing a lot of standing, a lot of walking, a lot of waiting. Make sure you've got some comfortable shoes so your dogs aren't barking at the end of the day.
Yeah, this sounds like a really simple tip, and it is, but it's something you want to make sure that you pay attention to because he's absolutely right. If you've been to one of these things before, you know that it is a lot of waiting and a lot of walking. We'll be back next week as we continue to count down the road to Celebration. It's a celebration. And speaking of celebration, I know, Pete, you and I are very excited. You and I have a big day on Saturday.
Very big day. Actually, a very long day is what it'll eventually be, starting at 1:45.
1:45 or 1:50?
1:45 or 1:50. I figure we'll buffer it a little bit, and I'll probably be on your couch by about 1.
Right.
Just to make sure. We are going to watch the Star Wars Saga in HD on Cinemax.
It's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be great. And we are going to be hanging out in the forums all day. So if you are on there and you've got something to say about it or just want to chime in with us, we're going to be hanging out.
Right. So make sure you check out the official ForceCast forums over at RebelScum.com. Again, we will be hanging out, hitting the refresh button, and hopefully having some conversation about the saga in HD as it unfolds. We'll be there for all 13-plus hours. It's going to be fun. We've kicked the women out of the house for the day, and I'm really looking forward to it. There was a great ad in Entertainment Weekly. I don't know if anybody saw this, promoting Cinemax's presentation of the Star Wars Saga in HD. Fold-out ad with a sound chip. When you opened it up, it had the Darth Vader breathing. And I can't get enough of that Coldplay commercial.
It's now available on iTunes if you're out there looking for it.
It is, and I've downloaded it and watched it a lot. I don't know. It just, it psychs me up a lot for this for particular event. So again, we'll be on the forums all day Saturday for the second. This is technically the second showing of the saga in HD on Cinemax. So please be there. I think that's about it for our.
Oh wait, we do have a rebuttal of a rebuttal.
Oh, that's right.
We received an email this week that we had apologized because we had heard that we thought the name of the book is...
Oh, Last of the Jedi, number 6.
Last of the Jedi, number 6. We had thought that it was coming out. Jason had mentioned that it was coming out and or was out.
Right.
And then we were corrected and told that...
Oh, by Jay Shepard.
It is not out. But we got an email this week.
Somebody has it.
Someone did get it.
Yeah,
so that is the rebuttal of our rebuttal, is that Jedi, Last of the Jedi, number 6, is actually out in stores, so go pick up a copy.
And don't you love Jay's passive-aggressive way of correcting us? He's like, oh, gee, I wasn't able to find that book, and I wasn't aware it was out. Did you guys get some kind of special copy or something?
I love that Jay turned into Mr. Garrison.
Oh, he did a little bit, didn't he? Here are your headlines.
Okay, children.
Here are your headlines.
I have good news for you, my lord.
That's good news.
Come closer, I have good news.
StarWars.com featured an article this week from Variety which profiles the concerns of major movie studios with the lack of cornerstone franchises to build on and their never-ending search for the next franchise. Now, what prompted this article is the acquisition of United Artists from MGM by Tom Cruise and Paula Wagner. And the author goes on to talk about how... there's growing concern that these franchises, which is where they believe all the money is, are starting to die out. Obviously, the big one that we're concerned with, Star Wars, is over, and they're not going to be making any more. There are some other ones that are on their way out. X-Men 3 was supposedly the last X-Men, although they may be doing some spinoffs. Harry Potter is going to be going for some time, but Lord of the Rings is over. Superman is coming back, but Spider-Man may be wrapping up next year. So they talked about a lot of the different franchises and where the concern is. You know, one of the things that they mentioned was that in the recent years, Hollywood's biggest series have produced the most massive returns, obviously. Consider that 7 of the largest, Harry Potter, Pirates of the Caribbean, Lord of the Rings, X-Men, Spider-Man, Shrek, and Star Wars have generated over $15 billion in worldwide box office, and one out of every 9 tickets sold since 2001 has been for one of those franchises.
Wow.
So those are the ones that you know, they talked about trying to corner the market, as you will, and find the next big franchise. And they talk about, well, you know, even some of the long-standing franchises are starting to lose some steam. Tom Cruise knows about this from Mission Impossible. When I read that, I thought to myself, Mission Impossible 3 didn't bomb because people don't want to see Mission Impossible. They just were fed up with Tom Cruise. So, you know, this article, he irritates me a little bit. So this article kind of took on that tone. But, you know, it was interesting to read all about how these executives are talking in technical terms about some of these things that we love so much. They talked about brand awareness for these established franchises, you know, and how they're going out and trying to, instead of building from scratch, which is what some of them have done, they're trying to build on the ones that they've got. You know, we've got Aragon is coming out fairly soon based on the book. James Bond is coming back. Rocky's coming back. They're going to do a new Die Hard movie, Indiana Jones, all those. So they're trying to build on those because they've already got the established brand awareness. But what kept coming back into my mind as I was reading through this was, more so than anything else, there's a kinship between people who are into the franchise, like Star Wars, and the franchise itself. I mean, it's bigger than just a good movie or a well-produced movie. It's much more than that. And yeah, that's where the disconnect is, I think, a lot more so, is that, you know, people will go out to see a good movie, but what they want to see is something that they can really buy into.
Yeah, well, these analysts, it seems, it's funny, because they don't really get it.
No. They live somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, they're bean counters to an extent, and it's the love. In fact, you and I, we were out last weekend, and we were asked. We started talking about, we do this podcast, and they said, "Well, what do you love so much about Star Wars? Why do you love it so much?" Like, what do you mean? What do you love? and this particular individual who will remain nameless that asked us that, you know, it's hard to explain. I mean, you know, we could get into it and talk about it to her for an hour, or she could just tune in and listen to the show. But I think a lot of times these analysts, they just don't get it, and they try to come up with all of these other reasons and facts for this and that. Like, he totally missed the obvious thing about Tom Cruise.
Right.
Tom Cruise fell out of favor with the public because he was jumping on the couch and talking about, you know, his relationship with this young girl. And it turned off a lot of people. It was just too much.
It was way too much. And, you know, from what I've heard from people who have seen it, because I didn't, but it was one of the better movies, and the performance by Philip Seymour Hoffman as the villain was excellent.
Yeah.
But that was not enough to overcome the public opinion, the court of public opinion anyway. And that's another thing that kind of resurfaced with all these franchises, is that they want to see something where they've got characters that they can buy into and that they enjoy, stories that they like, and to see the franchise done justice.
So are they trying to use this as a reason why box office in general has been down?
No, it was more of just what's an explanation thing. I'm still trying to figure that out. It was a very lengthy article, and at the end I went, that's it? But, I mean, it's a good article because it follows a few different angles regarding it. But
it's at StarWars.com?
Yeah, it's at StarWars.com, and it just basically shows that this is still not an exact science, and everyone is still trying to find the next Star Wars.
And the elections may have come and gone. We've got one final story here for you. Former Force.net humor editor Christopher Knight was actually on the ballot in Rockingham County, North Carolina, as a candidate for school board. And reading from his blog, all told, there are 16 candidates running, or were running, for the 5 seats on the board, the most candidates in one race in county history. Obviously, something was needed to help distinguish me. Well, I made a commercial that ran on local television here, and let's just say I couldn't leave my love of Star Wars alone. In the ad, the Death Star blows up a little red schoolhouse as a metaphor for the over-meddling that the federal government does with education, a la No Child Left Behind. In the second half of the ad, you see me wielding a lightsaber while I talk about what I believe and where I stand on some issues. Well, the ad received a lot of regional attention, and this past Thursday, myself and two other candidates that have been running offbeat TV ads made it into a section of the New York Times. Well, that's pretty cool. We have, however, sad news.
Yes, unfortunately, Christopher did not win a seat on the school board.
But
Valiant effort. Valiant
absolutely. Effort. So go over to Force.net and check out the story. We'll have the link on our show notes. And all his ads are on YouTube, I believe.
Yes. See, that we talked about this a lot. That's somebody who gets it, who gets our generation, gets, you know, knows what a podcast is, knows what a blog is, and, you know, puts their commercials on YouTube and whatnot. It's at least someone who's in touch with us. And Lucasfilm is continuing to pursue Shepperton Studios for copyright infringement, this time filing in the High Court in London. Andrew Ainsworth of Shepparton told the BBC that he plans to fight the suit as soon as he seeks legal representation. Now, I read that quote from the from Andrew Ainsworth of Shepparton and thought to myself, that ship has sailed, buddy. You already lost a $20 million lawsuit in California. You may have wanted to seek out legal counsel when that one was going over.
Well, what's he? He wants to appeal this, right?
Yes. I mean, I believe he's going to.
On the grounds of what?
He says that
he created Star Wars?
Here's a quote from him that kind of sums it up. He says, as far as I'm concerned, I am the original maker, and I'm using the original molds. I am confident on the rights and the wrongs. Luke Skywalker would not have let this go. No need to drag Luke into this. Well, no, I mean, this was interesting because it's the follow-up, and it gives a little bit more information on the story. This all stemmed out of he sold two of the original Stormtrooper helmets at auction in 2004 for 60,000 euros.
Okay.
So at that point he went, all right, here I can make some money off of this. So he started producing.
These were the originals that he designed
for the original films back in the 70s.
Okay.
And so he started making replicas. And, you know, we were talking about how it was nice because he didn't have to pay the royalties yet, you know, so he's getting all the profits. Well, I thought that would maybe make it cheaper, but it didn't make it cheaper. I mean, the replica helmets were 295 euros a piece.
Wow.
And the full trooper outfits were 1,500 euros a piece. So, you know, obviously with the exchange rate, that's a pretty good chunk of change. And,
no doubt.
You know, that's all going to his pocket. You know, I can feel for him a little bit because he did, you know, do the original design. But, you know, when you do something for George, it's George's.
That's right.
Well, it led into this other article by Reg Wydevin, who is an attorney and who actually went to C3, by the way. And he talked about the suit, and it was interesting only from the standpoint that he kind of transitioned from that lawsuit into this case in Detroit where a man who's obsessed with the Dungeons and Dragons role-playing game murdered a coworker and is using his obsession with the game as his defense. I wasn't sure how he made
to
it.
An innocent person that's dead.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's so bizarre.
How do you make that leap?
I don't know how he made the leap. It was kind of like
killing somebody, being obsessed with D&D to
his transition line was something along the lines of most of us who are obsessed with Star Wars. He includes himself, obviously, in that keep our obsessions to a tolerable, acceptable social level. But here's a guy who didn't. And I mean, this is such a bizarre case. This guy was angry at one of his coworkers, went home, got a homemade samurai sword, walked back, slashed the guy, went to the convenience store, bought a beer and a cigar, went back, sat down at the top of the guy's head, placed him like he was on a cross, and drank the beer and smoked the cigar until the cops came.
That is an unstable human being. Imagine being in the cube next to that guy. And fans of the original Star Wars trilogy will remember the great Lorne Peterson. Well, Field's Edge has a new interview with Lorne, and he talks a lot about how the 2006 DVD release was kind of cathartic for him because, you know, all of that model work that he did for the original films, you know, is kind of, hate to use this word, but maybe forgotten a little bit in the day of CG sets and CG vehicles and all of that. So now they did do some model making for the latest films, but it's nowhere near so much so the fact that Lucasfilm actually sold off the model making division of ILM to another company. And he talks about just what it's like to no longer have that Lucasfilm name behind you. And he says, you know, you can't get people to jump through all the hoops like you used to. You know, this is so-and-so with Lucasfilm. It carried a lot of weight. And so it's kind of a melancholy interview, to be quite honest with you. The link is over there at theforce.net. We'll have a link to it on our show notes. And it's a great little kind of peek into the mind of somebody that we owe, as Star Wars fans, so much to.
Where were you in July of 1983? If you were lucky, you were at Star Wars at the Mall. StarWars.com took another trip down memory lane as they looked at the Return of the Jedi promotional exhibit that may have appeared at a mall near you in 1983. Now, this was a walkthrough display which featured three separate activity areas, a Jedi Hall of Fame, Photo Center, and Communications Center. In the Hall of Fame, visitors could view concept art, photos, drawings, and documents from the classic trilogy displayed on a large mural-sized panels attached to the tubing. In the Photo Center, guests could be photographed in front of the Ewok Village artwork, appearing to become part of a scene from the film. And finally, the Communications Center allowed visitors to listen in on pre-recorded introductions by C-3PO, of course, voiced by Anthony Daniels.
Who else?
And Darth Vader. I don't think anyone has ever voiced C-3PO other than Anthony Daniels.
I think you're right. If there's ever been a guy that has had an ironclad death grip on a role, it's Anthony Daniels and C-3PO, my gosh.
Yes, well, these messages dropped hints about the storyline revealed in Return of the Jedi, and you can actually go on hyperspace and listen to an audio cast of the messages, which are funny just looking back in retrospect, but this is an interesting display just because it actually came out months after Jedi's debut. I mean, it came out in July and just kind of showed up at theaters. I mean, it was great.
The film was, you know, wildly popular several months after, sure. I think, pretty close to it.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely still in the theaters at that point, but this was actually intended to be a promotional tool to get people excited about
kind of a teaser thing.
Yeah, okay. But they never got the production done in time. They sent this out to 130 malls. Production was originally scheduled to be 240 malls, and they actually did 150. So you're kind of thinking, well, they didn't ship all of them. So, you know, I think it was something that was a great brainchild, but just never got the steam that it needed. And there was some interesting stuff where there was a lot of contests and stuff like this. And I can't remember, but I think maybe I may have gone by one of these and actually won a prize. I have these Star Wars Yoda soaps that I know I won from a contest, but I have no idea what the contest was.
Well, if you know, send Pete an email, podcast@theforce.net. Yoda soaps, were they like shaped like Yoda heads?
No, it was like a block picture of Yoda. And
it's soap.
And it was soap, yes.
With a picture of Yoda on it.
Yeah.
It was just carved.
It was carved.
It was carved.
Yeah, it was carved.
Do you still
have it? It was a raid. I do. I think it's actually kind of... Soap is one of those things that once it starts to get out of the package, doesn't last all that long.
No, definitely not. You know what's funny about this story, and we've talked about this before, the marketing, when you compare the marketing of the films in their initial release to the way that the franchise is marketed today, it just doesn't even compare. It's like it's not even the same movies that they're talking about. And obviously, I think the reason is that the people in marketing positions today grew up with Star Wars. You know, in addition to just the fact that some of the conventions and rules for marketing has changed and evolved over the years, but still, I think it's really a testament to the fact that you've got a lot of folks in professional jobs in all different fields that grew up with these films, and they certainly pay homage to them in any way that they can, and it kind of, reading this kind of made me realize just how good the marketing machine behind Lucasfilm is today. And a few quick stories for you. Fans of the Alec Guinness characterization of Obi-Wan Kenobi can have a piece, literally, of the character. All Headlines News is reporting that if you've got some cash, you can own a piece of Star Wars history. A selection of about 60 guns used in the James Bond films over the past 40 years are set to be auctioned off in London. Likewise, Obi-Wan Kenobi's costume from 1977 will go under the hammer. Obi-Wan's costume could sell for around $4,000, according to experts. Does that seem low to you?
It does seem low to me.
I mean, we're talking about the actual costume worn by Alec Guinness, Sir Alec Guinness.
It is kind of a dusty, old, smelly robe, though. I'm not sure what trash bin they pulled that out of, but, you know, I know that's what they did with most of the costumes, is toss them overboard.
Yeah, that's right. They did. And, you know, there were, I remember hearing stories about a guy that got a complete Vader costume by pulling it out of a dumpster in London during the filming of or after the filming of Empire Strikes Back. Can you imagine?
That's just blasphemy.
Oh, it is. So check out the link. If you got, I don't know, around $4,000, you could be wearing Obi-Wan's robes. And one final quickie news story for you. Now, I'm a bit of a wine drinker, as you know.
I do.
I'm over 21, so that's okay. But at any rate, Francis Ford Coppola, Coppola Productions, they have their own winery. And they do have a Skywalker Ranch Merlot that has just been released. Now, this is going to appeal to maybe less than 1% of our listeners, but here you go. The 2003 Lucas Merlot displays elegant aromas of wild black currant, blackberries, cinnamon spice, and green olive tapenade, followed by flavors of black cherry, dark plum, and black tea. Delicate notes of mocha, sweet dark cherry, and black currants framed by supple ripe tannins, leading to an extended and appealing finish. Very approachable now and will develop over the next 5 years. Is your mouth watering?
No, actually, you totally lost me at cinnamon.
And we've got a brand new guest in the cantina with us this week, Star Wars author Drew Karpyshyn.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
And we're joined in the cantina this week with Star Wars author Drew Karpyshyn. Did I say that right, Drew?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Drew, thanks for being here.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. So, Drew, just to kind of start out, give us an idea of where Star Wars found you initially and how you became a fan.
Okay, well, I was old enough to actually remember when Star Wars was first released, the first Star Wars, by which I, of course, mean Episode 4, when it was released in the theaters. I was, I believe I was 7 when I actually went to see it. I remember standing in line with my mother for, seemed like hours and hours, you know, to a little kid, and saw the movie, and of course, I like just about everyone else at the time, was instantly hooked, and for the next, I think, 4 years, I went every Halloween as Jawa. So, partly because it's cold up here in Canada, and you know you can throw a parka on under your robes and hoods and whatnot. But also, it was just something that kind of gripped me. And of course, you know, I had all the Star Wars figures. Everyone on our block did. You know, I remember getting into schoolyard fights when I hadn't seen Empire, and people were telling you that Darth Vader was Luke's father, and I wouldn't believe it. I remember there was actually people fighting and calling people liars. I've been a Star Wars long, long time.
Yeah. Well, so you were a fan from your childhood. What was your first professional brush with the Star Wars franchise?
Actually, that would have been my work on the Knights of the Old Republic video game, put out by BioWare, I think it's almost 4 years ago now. And I had actually started working at BioWare. They'd hired me to work on that project, although I didn't know it at the time when I was being hired. Obviously, they couldn't discuss it. That was really sort of my first big introduction into the expanded universe as well.
How long had you been with BioWare and before the Knights of the Old Republic project came along?
Well, they already had the project, and they were looking to hire a writer to work on it when I was hired. That's specifically what I was hired for.
Mm-hmm.
Although, if anyone knows about the video game industry, it takes, you know, a lot of ramp-up before you finally get a game out the door. It takes several years. So I did work on other projects while I was there, while we were kind of, you know, planning out the initial story for Knights of the Old Republic and doing our research and trying to familiarize ourselves with the Old Republic era from some of the other sources out there.
Right.
So I ended up, before, you know, I started at BioWare in 2000, so I was actually, you know, with the company for several years before the game came out. So I was there pretty much right at the first phase of production. And then we went, you know, as I said, working on other projects here and there as they were getting ready to go out the door, and then, you know, always sort of coming back to Knights of the Old Republic in that time period.
Right. Give us an idea of what it really means to be the writer of a video game. It's something that until I knew that we were going to be talking to you this week, it's something I had never really thought about. But what are some of the things that, you know, the responsibilities that the writer for the game has?
Well, BioWare games are, for anyone who's played them, they're a little bit different than a lot of other games. They're role-playing games, so you can pretty much talk to you know, any character in the world. We basically let you create a character, drop you down into a, you know, what's hopefully comes across as a living, breathing world, and you can pretty much run around, talk to people. They all have a story to tell. They all sort of have their plots and quests to give you. So because of that, we actually have an immense amount of dialogue in the games. For example, Knights of the Old Republic had roughly 500,000 words of dialogue, which is about the same as five novels.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So, you know, as a writer, we pretty much plan out the storyline and then write the dialogue that will take you down that storyline at BioWare. We're one of the few companies that has full-time writers because of the volume. Very few other games kind of replicate the same experience, so they don't tend to use full-time writers. So it's quite a bit different than your standard writer for a video game. A lot of times they'll contract that out to somebody who will write everything, you know, in a month. You know,
right.
All the cuts, all the lines. With BioWare, you know, it's a full, you know, full-time job that you're working on, you know, for 2 to 3 years before the game actually comes out.
Now,
and of course, I did work with a team, too. I want to make that clear. I'm not the only writer on Knights of the Republic. There was actually four of us. So I can't take all the credit for the game.
Now, Drew, we were talking, we actually did for this past week's show, we did a profile on Darth Revan. One of the things that we talked about was the fact that there was one story that they pull from that that's considered to be canonical and is mm-hmm. the story that actually follows it. And then there's obviously so many offshoots. Kind of talk about how you started. Do you start with that story and then kind of work off from it, or do you develop the story as you go along, or how did that kind of play out?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing was, you know, you had two very significant choices with the Revan story. One was whether you were male or female, and one was whether you went to the light or the dark side. So we kind of almost had to pick one story, and it ended up being the one that ended up being the one taken for canon, and try to make sure we had a good handle on that story. We understood it, we had it nailed down, we felt it worked. Then we had to try and take that single story and modify it into four different stories that had enough common elements that it would make sense no matter what you did, but had enough unique elements that it would feel like a different experience every time you're playing it. So we basically start with the one story, really flesh it out, hammer it down until we're very happy with it, and then we start modifying it, altering it, adding in those other options, and finding places where, oh, this isn't going to work if we want to give you this choice, so we have to rewrite this in the original story. So that's kind of the process we used.
Earlier, when you were talking about writing the game, not only are you actually developing the story, but you're actually writing the dialogue as well. Is that correct?
That is correct. We tend to try and have, you know, a fairly detailed outline of the story locked down before we get to writing the dialogue, because it does help you stay focused, and you know, especially with multiple writers on the team. Everybody has to know what the overall plan is. Now, as the lead writer on the project, I was responsible for making sure every contribution from all the writers fit together, in a way that worked for the story and was consistent with style, things like that. But you need that solid outline before you actually start writing. So a lot of the early stuff we do, several months, almost a year when all said and done, is trying just broad outlines of the story. You know, getting a general feel for, here's a 5-page summary of what's going to happen. And then when the actual writers come on, they kind of work out all the details. You know, mm-hmm. So we knew we would go to certain planets, and we knew what would happen at the end of that planet, but how you got there, we kind of left up to the individual writers to fill in all those details.
Now, Drew, when the project came about, did LucasArts, did they come to you with a story that they wanted to tell, or did they kind of give you a lot of latitude as far as where you wanted to go with it and just kind of said, here's an old, we want an Old Republic story that's a role-playing game, go at it?
Actually, for both the Knights of the Old Republic game and for the Darth Bane novel that I wrote, they had actually had a very similar experience, which was they came to us and said, here's what we're looking at. We want a Old Republic time period story. And that's about it. Beyond that, you know, they would give us feedback on what they liked or what they didn't like. But we were given pretty much free rein, you know, to work within the Star Wars universe as we kind of saw fit. As I said, they had approval over everything, but, you know, they definitely let us do what we wanted. They didn't try to force a story on us. They didn't try to force any characters on us. And that was the same experience for both the video game and the novel, which is actually, you know, a good thing, but in some ways also a bit of a scary thing, because you know this is going to be seen by literally millions of people, you know, and you know you're in a universe that people have had a very long association with, you know, 20, 30 years, and they feel very strongly about it. So you want to make sure you capture the spirit of Star Wars. And I think that was their main focus. They wanted to make sure we captured the spirit of Star Wars, but they would let us tell whatever story we wanted to that accomplished that task. And, you know, fortunately, I think it worked out very well. I think everyone was happy with the end result, and we had a very good working relationship with LucasArts.
Absolutely.
How do you think your history as a fan really helped you with the development of this project and your subsequent projects?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, as a fan, you understand what you like about Star Wars, and there's a lot of universal appeal. You know, obviously everyone has their own specific things that they in particular like about the universe. It's such a broad, rich, varied universe that there's something for everybody. But there's a lot of universal elements that everybody can identify with and relate to. You know, iconic villains. I mean, Darth Vader is, just quite simply, the greatest villain in the history of movie and pop culture, you know?
I thought you would say Darth Bane is.
Well, I'd like to believe that, but I mean, let's be realistic. But, you know, that type of iconic villain is, you know, is such an essential part of most Star Wars sagas. So, you know, you want to make sure you have that in there. There's that, you know, the sense of exploration, you know. There's no part in the movie where they stay on one planet for the entire movie. You know, it's about different locations, different cultures, experiencing these fantastic settings. You know, so if you understand those things as a fan, it's easier to create things for other fans because you know what drew you into the universe. Mm-hmm. And you just have to kind of say, this is what I want to see, and trust that other fans are going to want to see that as well.
Okay. Well, and I think that, I mean, with Star Wars, when you go back, and it's kind of hard to remember, you know, to put yourself in the place of somebody that was a teenager or a young person in 1977 before really video games hit. But if there was ever a property, anything that was a natural fit for video games, it's definitely Star Wars. And I think that, would you think that the video game industry has kind of developed around movies like Star Wars?
I think so, because, you know, it's a combination of, for me, a couple things. You know, it's the amazing special effects, which you can do in a video game. You know, you can't see these things in real life. You know, spaceships, space battles, you know, lightsaber fights with, you know, amazing acrobatics. You know, that's something that people want to see on the screen and then experience themselves in some way. And obviously, you know, we can't do it in real life, so video games gives us a good simulation for that. And I think the other thing is, it allows you to, you know, save the galaxy, you know, or destroy it, you know. Mm-hmm. You could go either way. Yeah. But, you know, again, they're so epic in scope, the movies. When you really sit down and think about it, you know, how many, you know, entire planets. One of the earliest scenes in Star Wars is an entire planet being destroyed. Like, the scope of that is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can express that, obviously, again, in real life, but you can get that across in video games. So I do think you're right. I think it's sort of, you know, science fiction and fantasy tend to drive the video game industry, and I think Star Wars has the best elements of both science fiction and fantasy and combines them in a very unique way, which is part of what gives it such a lasting appeal.
Well, looking specifically at the storyline of Knights of the Old Republic, how much of that ground was tilled by the time you got to develop that story? And what are some of the resources and things that you used for inspiration?
Well, it was actually pretty much a blank slate when I got there. A lot of the early story prototyping was done by me and by James Olin, who was the director of design at BioWare, with input from a lot of other key people. You know, I don't want to start naming people because there's so many people who end up being involved at some point. But we pretty much started at the beginning, and you know, of course, we had the movies as references. You know, there was all the kinds of, as I said, iconic experiences in the movies that we wanted to not imitate, but, you know, get across the same feeling. You know, and it's clear to see the parallels. I mean, you know, Malak bombs Karras early in the game, similar to where, you know, Vader destroyed Alderaan. You know, so we had those movies, but then we also just kind of threw ourselves into all the other resources. The Dark Horse comics of the Old Republic were one of the few things actually set in the Old Republic, so we looked very closely at the Dark Horse comics. And there was a lot of people at BioWare who are role players, so they were very familiar with the old West End Games role-playing game, Star Wars game. So we used that as one of our references. And of course, you know, LucasArts provided us with all the assembled data that they had. You know, they call it the Holocron, right, which is just a vast archive, right. Star Wars knowledge. So, right. You know, they gave us that as well. So it's not a matter of, you know, a shortage of resources. The real trick is trying to see what you like about each of those original sources and then, you know, how you're going to take it and get that same feel across in something that still has a unique and new way to put a spin on things.
As the story was developing, were there periodic checkpoints with the folks at Lucasfilm or LucasArts to say, okay, well, here's where we're taking this. Is this still okay? How much of follow-up was there throughout the process?
Basically, they would kind of come in at every sort of significant stage of the story. So, you know, we would come up with an outline, you know, brought, like say, a sort of a four-page summary of, you know, what the game story would be with the major points on it. And they would give us feedback on that and say, like, what they liked, what they didn't like, what they wanted to see more of or less of. We would go away, take their comments, rework it, bring it back to them, and we repeat that process until everybody was satisfied it was the best story it could be. Then we would go to the next stage, which would be maybe, you know, creating the first world that you would go to. And we would flesh that out in great detail, list all the characters who were involved, list exactly what you would be doing. And they would, you know, give us feedback once we had implemented that. You know, again, then we would sort of make changes as we went. The big thing was once you have that main outline and everyone agrees on it and everyone understands the vision of the project, it's a lot easier to do those checks because as long as we stay true to the vision, they normally don't have a problem with it. So,
right.
You know, they were involved, but mostly at the very, very beginning to clarify that vision, and then mostly at the end once it was done because they wanted to play through it and, you know, see what they thought of it, obviously, and, you know, sort of sign off on the final project. So the beginning and the end is where they had the most input.
Now, like I said, we talked about Darth Revan this past week. Was there, like, an aha moment that you guys had when you were working on the team that you decided that you were going to go with the idea of him having his mind wiped and giving him that blank slate with the history, but the blank slate to, you know, to go down either path?
Yeah, well, it's actually kind of funny because people who have played role-playing games will know that it's the person with amnesia seems to be a common way to start role-playing games because you're not encumbering the player with a history they have to understand. You're kind of letting them learn it for themselves. And we thought, well, let's not start with that, obviously. But there's a reason that mechanic is used because it does allow players to bring some of themselves to the character. So we thought, well, how can we possibly have it be the best of both worlds, you know, not the cliche where you start out with amnesia, but also where it turns out, you know, you almost do, in a way, have amnesia, but are able to still shape the characters you want. And we thought of many different ways to do that. We had some early ideas. One was that, you know, using the Force, maybe you had been killed and gone into the body of a soldier who was essentially brain dead and being kept alive in a Colto tank, as we had in Knights of the Old Republic.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the ideas that LucasArts said, you know, oh no, you can't use clones. We've got plans for clones, and you guys don't get to do it.
I think it's important to remind some of our listeners, Drew, when you're talking about the development of this game, what years are we talking about here?
This would have been probably, you know, 2000, 2001.
Okay. All right, so we're on the heels of the release of Episode 2, so clones were off limits at this point.
Yes. So, you know, we didn't know what they were going to do when we started kicking these ideas around, and they were very quick to come in. That's an example where they, you know, we were being true to the spirit, but there were certain details they couldn't approve.
Now, being that you were working on a project at such a close time as the development of Episode 2, were you kind of privy to some scoop, so to speak?
You know, I wish I could say I was, but the truth is we weren't, actually. The closest we would come was when we would touch on a subject accidentally that they had plans for, and they would say to us, no, you can't do that. But no, they didn't. You know, we didn't get previews of the scripts or anything like that. You know, we did do in Edmonton, the day Star Wars opened, we rented a theater, and the entire company went and saw, you know, each of the movies as they were released as a corporate outing. You know, it's a good way to spend an afternoon.
Absolutely.
The closest working. But that's as close as we got to you know, advanced screenings or anything right. like that. You know, we didn't get to meet anybody. George himself did not come down and outline his plans for us by any means.
And make sure you listen next week for part two of our interview with Drew Karpyshyn.
Hey, what are you trying to push on us?
A fine addition to my collection.
He's worth a lot to me.
And your Star Wars collecting news for this week. We'll kick things off, as we usually do, with Hasbro. For those of you with a Costco nearby, you might want to be on the lookout for a new lightsaber and figure set. Included in the set is the Luke Skywalker Return of the Jedi lightsaber and the Darth Vader lightsaber. Along with those, you get a couple of action figures. The Darth Vader figure from the throne room, last seen in the original trilogy collection figure assortment. And then the figure that we all hoped we'd see repacked, the Luke Skywalker from the throne room duel from the 2003 Saga line. So the set is currently available for $29.99, so check that out if you have a Costco nearby.
I'm actually surprised that they included a Vader with this.
And there are new images of the TIE Fighter, soon to come out as part of the 30th anniversary collection. Boxed images over on the German site 4inches.de. You can see that it's now white with a new canopy and has the smaller ejecting wings like it used to. So if you want to check out those photos, you can. I'm really liking the packaging. Even the packaging on the vehicles has that angular corner. And I'm sure it's going to torture all the mitten box collectors, but what can you do?
It looks cool.
And if you've been checking out the Sunday Circular ads, you might want to take note. In this week's ad, there are a couple of sales that you might be interested in. Kmart has basic Star Wars figures on sale for $5.99, and it says that all Star Wars toys are also on sale. And Target has the latest Star Wars Transformers on sale for $12.49 and 10% off other selected Star Wars toys. Our local Target here, actually, I was in there today, and they have the figures for $5.30. I picked up another Endor Rebel Trooper. The wrong one. I bought the wrong race.
Did they have the other one?
No, they don't. They didn't have the Caucasian one yet.
Well, you can't feel bad about it then.
Well, I know, but I forgot which one I had. It happens. Speaking of Target, you might have seen that they have their new toy catalog hitting mailboxes. And you know, this kind of made me nostalgic for, do you remember the old JCPenney Christmas catalog?
Mm-hmm. And the Sears Wish book,
yeah. I used to just, I'd burn holes in the pages with my eyes when that thing would hit.
Although I will say this left me a little bit, even though it was nostalgic, I was left wanting a little bit. There was not very much in there that made me go, ooh.
No, there's not a whole lot as far as Star Wars goes, but the Star Wars Transformers and the Tactics Intergalactic Showdown is pictured up. Plus, you got the Lego Imperial Star Destroyer. And there are coupons, though. $5 off the Tactics Intergalactic Showdown and $5 off the Lego Star Wars 2 video game. So the coupon expires November 22nd. So make sure you don't miss those. Speaking of Hasbro, we've got The Greatest Hits 2007 Fan Favorite Showdown Round 3 is currently underway. We're down to the Sweet 16. So fans are continuing to choose which one of their favorites figures in the modern line is going to be incorporated into the Greatest Hits line in 2007. So there's a head-to-head tournament between 16 different figures. Well, I tell you what, it's all troopers, really.
it's coming down to trooper versus trooper in most of the rounds.
Yeah, it really is. Hey, you know what? The people have spoken. The masses have spoken.
That's what you want. That's what you get.
That's right. So, and no one's saying that these are the only figures we're going to get.
Right.
And no one is saying exactly how many Hasbro is going to do.
Out of the line.
Right. At least out of the ones that Rebel Scum readers and voters pick. So, you know, there's still hope. Maybe if there's one that didn't quite make it. But at any rate, check it out. I mean, it's a hotly contested race at this point. So check that out and make sure you get your vote in because your vote counts. Let's rock the vote. And your Star Wars Hasbro Q&A for this week, the 17th weekly Q&A, has some interesting questions and even more interesting answers. Kicking off with a question from Rebel Scum. With all the recent holographic figures that have been released recently, Emperor Palpatine, Princess Leia, Yoda, Emperor Palpatine, Plo Koon, Aayla Secura, blah, 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 where's Darth Vader? Now, that is not a question that you and I have been asking when it comes to the Hasbro 3 and 3 quarter line. Where's Darth Vader?
No.
Yeah. He's swinging from the pegs. That's where he is. But the question goes on to say, he has more screen time as a hologram than any other character except for the Emperor. Hmm. I don't know that that's true. Is that true?
I'll take their word for it.
Might we see this figure one day? If so, which Vader would you likely use as the base? Maybe an all-new sculpt? Hasbro replies, this is a good suggestion, and we don't know why we haven't slotted in Vader for this unique treatment. We do know that we want to be careful how many we do and how much of each holographic figure that we do. There is a smaller run on those figures, but Vader is a great candidate the next time we do one. And they ask us, which sculpt should we use? And Dan Curto says, let's find out what the fans think. So he's got a link to the forum so you can voice your opinion as to if they were to do a holographic Darth Vader figure in the 3 3/4 Hasbro line, which sculpt would you want?
I can't believe that in all the incarnations of Darth Vader that we've had in the last 10 years or whatever, that nobody went, you know what, let's try a holographic Darth Vader. It blows my mind.
Yeah, I don't really get it either. And I kind of had the same reaction when I read this that Hasbro did. It's like, oh, there isn't one?
Who was supposed to be on this? Jimmy?
When we were talking earlier about the contest at or the 2007 fan favorites poll, there was a question on another website, we won't mention which, but saying, well, why aren't all of the Star Wars forum boards voting on the inclusion for next year's Greatest Hits line? And their answer is, well, in the future, if we run another such poll, we will probably do it differently to make sure that we get the widest possible net-wide participation. Ideas range from selecting a smaller subset of figures for voting and allowing all sites to send back results, or possibly using the Hasbro site as a voting place. We understand the reluctance to drive traffic off-site, but I think it's the community that you and others have worked so hard to foster is what makes each site special, and that's what makes people keep coming back. So, yeah, maybe some feathers ruffled that Rebel Scum got the nod from the folks at Hasbro to do this, but you know, clearly Hasbro's probably looking at the numbers and looking at the hits that Rebel Scum gets and the dedication there on the you know, Dan does an incredible job of archiving the figures. And
well, I think that was a big part, is just using Dan as a resource, absolutely, because he has done an absolutely fantastic job in putting this all together. And I was amazed at the bracket when that came out, and I think that really sold it on where it was going
to
be.
Yeah, so. I mean, anybody that's done any kind of web design has to be impressed with, you know, putting together that bracket system and the fact that, you know, you hover over it and the bigger picture comes up, and it's like magic to me. And another question here is Cloud City. which is near and dear to my heart, one of my favorite all-time sequences in the whole saga. They say Cloud City, it's the site of one of the huge turning points of the Star Wars saga, yet it has not been granted a wave of action figures since 2004, and even that wave was only three figures, although the Cloud Car pilot was pretty sweet. Yeah, there was only one Bespin Vader squeezed in the Tatooine wave this year. But when can the Captain Solo fanboy expect to see the new super-articulated Bespin Han he so desperately wants? All right, no specific figure questions. How about a simple, will we see a Bespin-themed wave in 2007? Well, Hasbro says not in 2007, but we will definitely be going back to Bespin. But patience, it'll be worth the wait.
Hmm.
So hopefully we'll get... I would love to see a playset. I know we're not going to see it. According to what they say, but maybe something where you know piecemeal it together with smaller parts and might create something cool, like I don't know, when Luke flies out the window. Do you remember that? Did you have that the
little ejector thing?
Yeah. Do you remember when you had that?
I didn't have it, but I remember kids who did.
What's that supposed to mean? And finally, speaking of Dan Curto and his fantastic archiving abilities. Our photo archives at rebelscum.com has added Mace Windu's Attack Battalion. Some great high-resolution photos there. Some interesting facts about this particular battle pack. The Mace Windu is a repack of the Mace Windu Episode 3 figure number 10 with a soft goods cloak.
Your favorite.
Oh, yeah. The Clone Commander, this is interesting, actually. The Clone Commander is an all-new figure based on the Airborne Trooper, which we'll be seeing shortly in the 30th Anniversary Collection. But all three Clone Troopers are repaints of the Shock Trooper figure with an added shoulder pauldron from Commander Bacara from Episode 3, number 49. And despite what it says on the packaging, these clones never appeared in the Clone Wars animated series on Cartoon Network. This battle pack was originally listed as General Windu's Squadron, and now the word battalion is misspelled on the box.
They don't have spell check on boxes yet.
I guess not.
I can't even get it on my email.
And that's your Hasbro news for this week.
Well, Sideshow kicked their contest mojo into high gear as they strung up a couple of Star Wars contests. 2.5 hours worth of Skywalker wines. That's what they got out of their contest from their spooktacular 2.5 hours. Could you imagine having to go through 2.5 hours worth of... Tosche Station bits and what have you. But as this podcast goes live, that one will be as well, and they'll be announcing their winner and playing it on their podcast. So check in to see who has got the best Skywalker wine out there. And no, it is not the Francis Ford Coppola winery. They also have a contest that's up right now for participants in their newsletter where you can win the Princess Leia premium format figure, which is the Princess Leia from Episode 4, where she's got the buns and the white gown, and you all know who I'm talking about. Definitely check out the newsletter if you are a subscriber to get your shot at winning that. Hopefully in the future they'll have a premium Boba Fett contest, because at this point it is sold out. You can hop on their waiting list, I'm sure, but at this point, if you haven't gotten yours, you're out of luck. And wrapping things up for a Sideshow, for all of you who ordered their Jabbas back in, what was that, October?
No, that was even further back August.
Yeah, it was like August.
I think.
It was July, because it was right after Comic-Con.
Oh, that's right.
So All of you out there who ordered your Jabbas after Comic-Con back in July, you'll have to wait a little bit longer for those to come out. His Jabba and the throne room will be pushed back to February for shipping.
I'm actually happy about that.
I actually am too. I was a little nervous about dropping 300 bones right after Christmas, since, you know,
400, by the way.
I mean, I want it as bad as you can want anything, but pushing out the cost a little bit isn't a bad idea. So that'll be coming in February, and I actually wouldn't be surprised if there were some other delays along the lines as well. But rest assured, you will get it.
And we got a slew of Gentle Giant news. I'll try to cover some of it here, but the best thing to do is check out the forums at rebelscum.com for the complete Q&A with the team at Gentle Giant. Some of the questions that were asked... Can we expect more Clone Wars animated maquettes beyond the hopefully expected Roran Korob? What are the chances for a Shaak Ti maquette? And the answer is, well, we're going to be closing the door on the Clone Wars maquettes in 2007. There are a few Clone Wars pieces in final stages of development, but we'll be focusing more on the Star Wars animated maquettes. And another question, when will the blister black and white or the monochrome animated Boba Fett be offered and how? Well, their answer is, well, at this time it is just not determined when this will be available in the U.S. Has a decision been made on how and where the rest of the monochrome animated? I like this. What about the Boba Fett? We don't know yet. How about the rest of them? How about the rest of the monochrome animated maquettes? Darth Vader and Leia and R2-D2. How will they be distributed? And will they be overseas exclusives? Will they have the same edition size as the monochrome Boba Fett maquette? Answer is, all of the black and white Star Wars animated maquettes will be exclusive to Blister in Japan and have an edition size of 500 pieces, with some being imported into the U.S. Again, at this time, it has not been determined when or how this will be available in the U.S. Man, I'm glad I don't collect those.
That would be very, very difficult news to swallow if I were a collector.
Yeah.
And I actually considered it because it's very cool looking.
Oh, they're a great line. A great line. And, a question about something near and dear to our hearts, the Leia statue, the slave Leia statue. The question is, will Leia's bum be covered? And the answer, the Princess Leia as Jabba's slave statue was shown at this year's San Diego Comic-Con. The one that was shown was an early prototype. And some changes have been made during approvals with Lucasfilm. That answer leads me to believe the...
It is yes?
Yes. She may not even have a butt.
It'll actually just be fuzzy, pixelated, skin-colored covering on the back.
Like the blue dot?
Yes.
You don't want to show someone?
Just a black bar.
Oh, my goodness. And the question, what's the status of the life-size Yoda, the non-animated version? And they answer, the life-size Yoda with light-up lightsaber should be shipping by the end of this year to those customers who pre-ordered at the summer conventions. And, as always, Rebel Scum is breaking news. This breaking news, the question is, will there be or are there any plans to release a Princess Leia in her outfit as she appeared in A New Hope? The answer, well, 2007 is the 30th anniversary of A New Hope, and since you asked... In cooperation with Rebel Scum, here it is, the first picture of the Princess Leia mini bust for Rebel Scum readers as she looked in A New Hope. And it's good. It's very good. I wouldn't come out and say that this is as good as the Alec Guinness that they just announced not long ago, but it's good.
Well, that one was top notch. I mean, that was as good as you can get. So.
Well, you know, there's an interesting phenomenon with Star Wars actors. There are some that sculptors just nail every time out of the park. And then there are some that they can never get. And
Carrie Fisher
is one of those.
Certainly one of those.
Now, the sideshow Leia as Boosh is really good. The sculpt on that face is fantastic. In fact, the sideshow, the premium edition Leia that they did is phenomenal.
Very good, very good.
So I mean, certainly not to disparage this, but it's just not quite there for me. But it's a prototype.
It's one of those ones that's really difficult. So we'll give them a pass.
Right. Question: will there be an exclusive bust for Celebration 4 in 2007? Will this year's Comic-Con exclusive be available at other conventions such as Wizard World Chicago? And do you plan to go to Celebration Europe? Will there be a European... Oh, he just goes on and on, I'll tell you. He says, yes, we will have an exclusive for Star Wars Celebration 4, but we are not ready to announce it. We do hope to have a traveling tour exclusive, but it has yet to be determined what shows we will be attending in 2007. Regarding UK Celebration, the staff of Gentle Giant will not be attending the Star Wars C4 UK, but we will have a presence there. And come February, right around Toy Fair, we will make an announcement regarding all exclusives for 2007. And another question that's kind of been on the mind of minds of a lot of collectors of the Gentle Giant products is, has there been any further thought on doing a real paying members collectors club? And they do call it the collectors club, but it doesn't function like, you know, a typical collector's club might, where you pay and you know, it's like on a subscription basis. It says it definitely has been a real thought and maybe a reality in the future. We're currently working on a major overhaul to our website. We hope to have the first phase complete in early December. So for that and a whole lot of other questions and answers from the Gentle Giant team, you want to make sure you check out the forums over at rebelscum.com.
And just a couple quick notes from Master Replicas and Atticus. Master Replicas passed along that the following list of items are sold out. The Shock Trooper helmet, Rebel Y-Wing studio scale, Darth Sidious lightsaber scaled replica, Han Solo Episode 5 limited edition blaster, Yoda Episode 3 limited edition lightsaber, Anakin Skywalker Episode 3 Force FX lightsaber. All hope is not lost, however. If you need any of these items to complete your collection, you can be added to the Master Replicas product waitlist. Just send an email including your name, the products that you are interested in, your mailing address, and your email, and they will add you to that list. And as far as Atticus goes, their new metal collection is going to be available in the U.S. Yes, that's right. The whole collection will be available for retail sale in mid-November 2006, just in time for Christmas. To give you a better idea about the whole process behind those new creations, you can check out their link on rebelscum.com, where they show you the intricate detail that goes into each one of those pieces. And all of those are available for pre-order on the Atticus US website. And again, we'll be
Atticus.
All of those will be available for pre-order on the Atticus website, US website, and will be available ready for shipping in November. So visit their forums if you want any more information, but they're definitely gearing up for a big push for their US products here in the next coming months.
And just a little bit of Lego news, a very little bit. There are some new photos of the AT-ST that's due out next year. You want to check that out at rebelscum.com, and it looks like a very cool set, so make sure you check that out. And that's going to wrap up your collecting for this week. Happy hunting.
All the classic battles.
Delta Squad, execute door breach.
Any way you want.
We have all but destroyed the Jedi Knights.
Fight as a Jedi.
The Old Republic is crippled.
Fight in space.
Darth 3PO?
And in gaming news, the company Edisbo, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right again, but took a shot at it anyway, has been signed to add expertise calculator systems to Star Wars Galaxies. Now, players can follow along on their professions as they include new Jedi and Bounty Hunter profession expertise calculators, smuggler and officer profession expertise calculators, and several other profession expertise calculators that will allow you to ramp up your and follow along a little bit better on your own professions. Not a lot of information on that yet, but those are in development and should be talked about soon. So keep an eye out for all of you Star Wars Galaxy players. Going to try and make things a little bit easier and a little more fun for you. And Mac users who would like to play Empire at War can now look forward to doing so in February 2007. Yes, that's right. The best-selling game will be coming to Macs. No official word on which release it will be as of yet. However, it appears it will be the original release with the update of Forces of Corruption to follow sometime soon after.
No chance, you think, of another expansion to be kind of timed with that?
Probably. Anything to get another buck out of you.
I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father, before the dark times, before the Empire.
Always in motion is the future, beyond the outer rim.
Master Voss has moved his troops to Bos Pity.
And we'll kick off your EU this week with an update on Dark Horse. As Obi-Wan just said, for over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic, before the dark times, before the Empire. So wait no longer, Dark Times number one, and its limited run variant cover, if you can find, you know, one of three that have been not been squandered up by some nasty comic book owner.
I think somebody has some in Amsterdam that they might be able to sell for you.
Anyway, it's due out this week. So as this podcast goes live, it should already be on the shelf at your favorite comic book retailer. So make sure you check that out. This is an opportunity for those of you wanting to get into the EU, particularly with the comic books, Here's a brand new series. Jump in.
Hyperspace members can finally check out how the Evasive Action web strip storyline ends as the final chapter, Endgame, was released on the official site week. Head over to StarWars.com for regular updates.
And as a follow-up to the first Star Wars panel-to-panel compilation of art from the Dark Horse comic series, Randy Stradley, the editor-in-chief of the Star Wars books over at Dark Horse, tells fans in regards to a second release, he says, whatever we end up calling it, it is true. A second volume of panel-to-panel is in the works, set for, I think, a May 2007 release, and it will focus on Dark Horse Comics' contributions to the expanded universe for a sneak peek at new pieces by artist Suneo Sanda that was commissioned for the book. Point your browsers over to the link posted at rebelscum.com. All right, so in the interest of trying to bring folks up to speed in the expanded universe, I know we get emails all the time from listeners that are saying, where do I start? You know, I want to start reading the expanded universe. The films are done. We're waiting for the TV series. The EU is where it's at. So where do I start? And really, there's nobody better to ask than Jay Shepard. Would you agree?
I would.
So Jay has put together the Beginner's Guide to the EU. Take it away, Jay Shepard.
Welcome to the first segment in the Beginner's Guide to the Expanded Universe. Today's segment will serve as an introduction and stepping-off point to discuss further the complexities of the Expanded Universe. Over time, I've had many people ask me, what's the best way to get into the Star Wars Expanded Universe? In the past, I've always had a hard time putting together a thoughtful answer, so now I'm going to try to create a guideline to help out introducing new fans to the gigantic world of the Expanded Universe. But before I can do that, let's get some things straight by way of introduction. Specifically, what is the Expanded Universe? Well, simply, the Expanded Universe, or EU, is everything else in the Star Wars universe that is not the movies. And by movies, I mean the 6 theatrical releases. So that leaves books, comics, television films, television series, video games, RPGs, toys, and anything else that presents relevant facts about the galaxy far, far away, or GFFA. As the name implies, these items expand the universe created in the films. They create backstories for briefly seen characters, present events featuring main characters outside the films, and create new events and characters that exist in them. As this is the first in a series of EU segments, it's only fitting that I start with some brief explanations of some terms that fans may find as they delve into this larger worldview. If I didn't, it would be like expecting you to know the difference between the Earth 1 Superman and the Earth 2 Superman and how the Earth Prime Superboy fits into the overall mythology. Our first word today is canon. No, it's not the weapon used by pirates to blast holes in other ships, but according to Merriam-Webster, Definition 4 is an unexpected principle or rule, a criterion or standard of judgment, or a body of principles, rules, standards, or norms. Canon is the word that fans use to define the continuity of the Expanded Universe stories. As you will see in this series, continuity in the Star Wars Expanded Universe is key. The earliest reference that I can find to Star Wars canon was an interview with Lucas Licensing's Sue Rostoni and Alan Couch in issue 23 of the Star Wars Insider. They say, "Gospel, or canon, as we refer to it, includes the screenplays, the films, the radio dramas, and the novelizations. These works spin out of George Lucas's original stories. The rest are written by other writers. However, between us, we've read everything, and much of it is taken into account in the overall continuity. The entire catalog of published works comprise a vast history, with many offshoots, variations, and tangents, like any other well-developed mythology." It's interesting to note that canon was originally a term that described a regulation or dogma decreed by a church council. The Holy Trilogy indeed. This brings us to our next term, apocrypha. In Judeo-Christian theology, the term apocrypha refers to any collection of scriptural texts that fall outside the canon or church's dogma. But for EU fans, it's any story that falls outside of accepted continuity or that has been rendered moot by an official source, such as one of the films. An example of a potential piece of apocrypha would be the Star Wars Holiday Special. This is actually not as cut and dry as it sounds, and we'll explore further ramifications to this in future segments. The last word that gets used a lot, and gets used a lot more as new publications come out, is retcon. Retcon is short for retroactive continuity. What's that mean, I hear you say? Well, to retcon something is to keep the original story, but to publish details in a later source to shoehorn the initial tale into the overall continuity. An example of a notable retcon is Boba Fett's lineage. This mysterious figure, well, prior to 2002 anyway, was known in the EU as Jaster Muriel, a journeyman protector exiled from Concord Dawn. Due to Attack of the Clones giving the true lineage of Fett, a number of writers and sources retconned the Fett history to include that the Muriel name was just an alias that Fett used and Jaster was a separate individual. Lastly today, I'd like to touch on the historical notion of the EU. Since 1991 and the publication of the Zahn books, the expanded universe has taken a very continuity-based approach. This has led to the creation of eras. As the history of the GFFA is always being written, and as we'll see more, rewritten, new eras get added. As a quick side note, all dating of eras in the Star Wars universe come in two forms. Stories may use an in-universe dating system, but for us fans, we term everything as either before the Battle of Yavin, BBY, or after the Battle of Yavin, ABY. The current eras are as follows. The Old Republic, from 25,000 to 1,000 BBY. The Rise of the Empire, 1,000 to 0 BBY. The Rebellion, 0 to 5 ABY. The New Republic, 5 to 25 ABY. The New Jedi Order, 25 to 40 ABY. And the newest era, The Legacy of the Force, from 40 plus ABY. So we have a lot to cover in the future, but in answer to the question I get asked, where to start in the EU, I'm going to tell listeners that a great place to start is with something that should be within everyone's comfort zone, the film adaptations. These novelizations of the Star Wars saga serve as the jumping-off point for every other piece of EU literature you will read. They are EU themselves being adaptations of the film scripts, but rate as one of the highest levels of canon in the Star Wars lexicon. The original three books by George Lucas, Donald F. Glut, and James Caan don't depart too dramatically from what viewers will see on the screen. They are quick reads and do more to explain little things about the films. If I were to ask you, quick, what's the name of that planet that Luke Skywalker grew up on? I know you could answer it. How about this? It's an EU name. Yep. Tatooine was never mentioned in Star Wars. Go check it out. The reason you know that name comes from books or comics from the EU. The Return of the Jedi story provides some nice backstory about Ben as Owen Lars's brother. Boy, can you say retcon? And a brief description of Luke building his new lightsaber, but that's about the bulk of it. Now, jump ahead 16 years to the prequel film adaptations. Remember that initial pod race between Anakin and Sebulba? The one where Anakin's racer was damaged so that he couldn't race at the Bunta Classic? How about the tale of Kleeg Lars going after his wife Shmi after she was kidnapped by Tuskens? You know, the one where he loses his leg? Or maybe you recall the heartache, the longing, the confusion that Anakin Skywalker felt during his descent to the dark side. Remember these? Well, don't feel bad if you don't. These are some of the expanded scenes and enhancements that current authors such as Terry Brooks, R.A. Salvatore, and Matthew Stover have given us. I hope that this has been informative, and you can be sure to check our show notes for more places to check on things about the expanded universe. Be sure to listen in for future segments where I will offer up guides to the individual eras, define better the nature of the EU, and keep you apprised of current happenings.
Well, thank you, Jay, for that. It answers that question that we get all the time. Where do I start? And I think Jay answered it very well.
He certainly did. And we're going to jump off that a little bit for our EU character of the week this week. We're going to debut actually a new feature where we're going to look at some characters that actually appeared in the films, however briefly, but have had their stories expanded in the EU. So, first one we're going to do is Bossk.
Here we go.
Bossk was hatched on Trandosha, 53 years BBY, and promptly devoured all his unhatched siblings. This began the life as a killer for the appropriately named Bossk, whose name means devours his prey in Dosh. The lizard-like Trandoshans are hunters by trade, and their main targets are the Wookiees, not only because of their hatred of the species, but because their deity, the Scorekeeper, rewards successful hunts. Bossk became a feared and respected hunter at an early age. When the Empire classified Wookiees as slaves, the hunting of them increased, and Bossk scored hundreds of pelts and gained his father's respect. Cardassk was the head of the Bounty Hunters Guild, and he brought Bossk in as a full member. His first mission was a rousing success, as he not only captured his bounty, a military deserter from the Stark Hyperspace War, but also terrified the natives, where his prey was king, and they named him the Monarch. He continued to rack up bounties and became very popular amongst the younger guild members. His first real setback came as he attempted to capture a pack of Wookiees, including Chewbacca. Han Solo came to the rescue and landed the Falcon on Bosk's freighter, crushing it. Bosk escaped and purchased two new ships as replacements, his flagship freighter, the Hound's Tooth, and a backup vessel named the Captivator. After the Battle of Yavin, he found himself coming up empty-handed more often as he competed against the best there is, Boba Fett. Fett thwarted Bosk on several occasions, so when he petitioned for membership in the guild, Bosk was very hostile to him. His hostility was right on, as Fett was looking to bring the guild down from the inside. After another botched mission for the Shell Huts, he decided to claim his birthright and killed his father, ate him,
"He's no good to me dead,"
and assumed his place as the head of the guild. This resulted in a split of the guild between those loyal to Kredosk and the young members backing Bosk. He was unable to resolve the internal conflict and began to accept freelance work for himself. He teamed with Boba Fett and others to try and capture Han Solo on Ord Mandel, but Solo escaped.
"Well, the bounty hunter we ran into when Ord Mandel changed my mind."
He was then called to the Executor as part of an elite team recruited by Darth Vader to track down the Millennium Falcon after the Battle of Hoth.
"There will be a substantial reward for the one who finds the Millennium Falcon. You are free to use any methods necessary, but I want them alive."
As he was leaving, he joined with two other bounty hunters, Tien Ayat and the Wookiee Chen Lembek, who claimed to have information on Solo's whereabouts. They tricked him into attacking a Wookiee prison. The Imperial governor was furious at the mistake and imprisoned Bosk. He escaped and stole his ships back. He continued his freelance work across the galaxy, at one point running into and killing the Corsec officer Hal Horn, whose son, Corrin Horn, had him in prison. After an Imperial arranged his release, he teamed with Zuckuss and Four Lom to try and intercept Boba Fett before delivering Han Solo, but they failed. Bosk was on Tatooine after Jabba's death and attempted to steal Slave One, thinking that Boba Fett was dead. Before he could, he was tricked into believing that the Hound's Tooth was wired to explode and jettisoned in an escape pod. He was stranded and broke on Tatooine, but managed to win back some credibility when he stood up to Boba Fett in Mos Eisley. Bosk had information in a stolen droid that Boba Fett needed, and he demanded and got a small fortune from him. He went back to bounty hunting, but retired after the New Republic's peace accord. 22 years after the Battle of Endor, he ran into Han Solo on Ord Mandel, and he couldn't help but rub in the news of Chewbacca's death. Then he ran into Solo's fist.
"You fixed us all real good, didn't you? My friend."
His current whereabouts are unknown, and he remains at large. Beyond his brief but memorable appearance in Empire Strikes Back, you can check out Bosk in Shadows of the Empire, the Bounty Hunter trilogy, which included Mandalorian armor, slave ship, and hard merchandise, Underworld, the Yavin Basilica, Tales of the Bounty Hunters, Bounty Hunters Scoundrel's Wages, plus appearances in the Marvel series number 50, number 71, number 72, and number 85.
"Play back the entire message."
"What message?"
"Message, Arthur, the message."
"The Emperor commands you to make contact with him."
"It's a trick. Send no reply."
And we'll kick off this week's listener mail. I almost said viewer mail. Did you hear that?
Well, maybe one day.
Maybe one day. We have faces made for podcasting, let me tell you. But at any rate, we'll kick off this week's listener mail with some Star Wars tales.
You're going to go first.
Oh, okay. I'll go first.
only because you've got two and I've got one.
So. Oh, that's right. All right. I'll go first. This one comes from Jared in New Orleans. And Jared says, "My story is from 1997 during the Feel the Force campaign. I think that was the name anyway. By Taco Bell. There was a display at Taco Bell with forms you could fill out and mail in to try and win a life-size Darth Vader, first prize, Stormtrooper, second prize, Han Solo in Carbonite, third prize, and a variety of smaller prizes following those. I picked up enough forms to mail in one per day for 2 weeks." I got to stop here just for a second. I did the same thing. And that's why I had to share this Star Wars tale, because it's just... Anyway, moving on. "I was still in high school in Illinois at the time and would drop them in the mailbox each day after basketball practice. I never really thought I had a chance to win anything, so I basically put it at the back of my mind and forgot about it. About 3 to 4 months later, I received a package in the mail. I opened it, and it was a packet of papers with a Feel the Force logo on them. I thought, this can't be. I actually won something? I flipped through the pages and saw that I had won the life-size Han Solo in carbonite. I was so excited. I'd been a huge Star Wars fan since before I can remember and couldn't believe I had just won something so cool. There were a bunch of papers I had to fill out and get notarized before Han was mine. Eventually, all of the paperwork was official, and Han was delivered a few months later. When my wife and I moved to New Orleans, Han came with us. We always joked that if New Orleans ever flooded, we could use Han as a boat to row out of the city. Little did we know that joke would become a reality. Thankfully, our apartment was a few feet above the flood line, and Han survived, and we didn't have to use him as a boat. And Jared does go on to say, I'll put in a little plug for the help in the city of New Orleans here. I've been coordinating volunteers full-time at my church in New Orleans since we returned to the city in October after Katrina. There's still much work needed to be done. New Orleans is not anywhere near back to normal, though it has been portrayed as that at times. If anyone would like to plan a trip to get out to the flooded homes, clean up yards, and help us build new homes for folks, you can email me at volunteer@firstbaptistneworleans.com. And I'll give that again. That's volunteer@firstbaptistneworleans.com. Please keep us in your thoughts and prayers. We will do just that, Jared, and thank you so much for the tale. He ends his email with a little quote here from J.D. Gray, and I guess this is from a collection, Epitaphs for Eager Preachers. He says, New Orleans first got in my hair, then on my nerves, and at last on my heart. And brother, when a city gets on your heart, you're stuck. So all the best to Jared and all the folks in New Orleans. Getting back to the tale, though, I did do the exact same thing. Now, I didn't, he says he did this, what, for 2 weeks? Yeah, 2 weeks, one per day. I grabbed a bunch of them because I have wanted that life-size Han and carbonite forever. And just as a side note for those, you know, fans of the Han and carbonite, there is a rumor that Master Replicas might have something in store in the next year or two as far as life-size Han and carbonite goes. So put the file that aside in rumor, but it's from a pretty good source. What do you got, Pete?
I've got a Star Wars tale coming from Paul. He says, being born in 1979, I'm a bit too young to remember the trilogy in theaters the first time around, but there is a great tale about my parents and my older brother when Star Wars first came out in 1977. My brother was born in 1975, so he was about a year and a half old when A New Hope came out. My parents, like everyone else, went to go see Star Wars and had to take my brother with them. Now, halfway through the movie, my brother begins to cry like any baby would. Funny part is, when my mom takes him out to the lobby to quiet him down, my dad stays behind in the theater and finishes watching the movie. My personal Star Wars tale revolves around the woman who later became my wife. Our first real date was going to see Episode 1 on opening day together, and it's been all Star Wars with us ever since, even having Star Wars featured in our wedding. Thanks, Paul. I think anybody that's out there listening to this podcast can think of finding that magic woman who can be completely included into all of those little things that complete your Star Wars universe.
You know, it was funny when I met my wife, we were in high school, and she had never seen any of the Star Wars movies.
Blasphemy.
I know. And she's my age. I couldn't believe it. But I can't tell you how much fun it was to be the one to show them to her. And then when we were at Ohio State together, the special editions came out, and I remember walking from the theater back to our dorms, and she was just full of questions. It was very cool. So that's something I'll never forget. So yeah, that special Star Wars woman is out there. And our next Star Wars tale comes from our own home state here in Ohio. This is Bill in Columbus. He's got a couple of stories. He says, the first is about experiencing the best special effect of all time. When I was watching Empire for the first time during the asteroid chase, the theater shook just as the first impact hit the Falcon. I noticed something was up, but I didn't care. Vader was chasing the Falcon. I later found that we had felt the shock of a 5.3 earthquake. No big deal if you're in California, but this was Ohio. I'd still like to know how George pulled that one off. And Pete, you said you actually remembered that, didn't you?
I do remember that. I was in fourth grade at the time, and we actually thought that the custodian had run over the cement with the lawnmower and found out later that it was an earthquake. So, well,
earthquakes are very rare here in Ohio, so thankfully.
Yes.
The second story from Bill says is near to my heart and is the one that set me on the Star Wars adventure. When the original Star Wars came out in 77, I was 9 and living on the family farm in Nowhere, Ohio. Sounds like a certain Star Wars character, actually. The hype never made it there, and the parts of the couple of TV ads that I remember for the movie struck me as it being a horror film, and I didn't have an interest in seeing it, let's face it. To the uninitiated, 9-year-old Darth Vader looks scary. Finally, around September, the word about Star Wars started to leak into my part of the world, mostly because my mom was a high school science teacher. Being the insightful person that my mom is, she talked me into wanting to see the movie. The problem was that it had already played its run and had moved on, but there were only 2 movie screens within 30 miles still showing it. My mom made the promise that if and when the movie came back, we'd go see it. That brings us to a Monday night in February. I found out that a neighboring town was playing Star Wars again. I brought this news to Mom, and she said that we could go that weekend, but I countered that it was probably a 1-week run and wouldn't be there come the weekend, and I even brought up, a promise is a promise. She hesitated for a bit, but eventually said that she would go the next night. So on a very cold school night, Mom drove us for 30 miles, and we saw Star Wars. From that point on, I was hooked, and the world never looked the same again. I really don't know if I would be the fan that I am, or even the person that I am, had I missed seeing the movie that night. Star Wars opened my eyes to the possibilities and made me a lifelong fan of science fiction. After high school, I left the farm, went to college, and I now work in computer software. All because someone kept her promise. By the way, the movie wasn't there come the weekend. So thank you, Bill, for that Star Wars tale from our own home state.
And we have some quick regular mail as well. This comes from Chris. He says, you mentioned on the podcast that there's some debate as to the best order to watch the Star Wars films. Seems obvious to me, though. First, you have to watch the recently released DVD originals without the special edition treatment. These are classic and stand on their own as a cohesive trilogy. Next, you watch the prequels, followed by the special edition versions of episodes 4, 5, and 6. The special edition films have been altered to fit in better with the prequels. Obvious, right? Don't forget to watch the Clone Wars cartoons after episode 2 and read Shadows of the Empire after episode 5. Thanks, Chris. We appreciate that. I think everybody's got their own way, and that's kind of a unique way to do it, where you're kind
of... Yeah, it is. I hadn't really thought about that, just looking at the different editions.
But that makes this coming weekend's marathon look very short in comparison.
Yeah, absolutely. If you forgot already, Pete and I did say at the top of the show that we will be glued to the screen come this Saturday, that's tomorrow for those of you listening to the show as it goes live, watching the Star Wars saga in high definition on Cinemax. So we'll be hanging around the forums at rebelscum.com. So go to the official Forcecast thread and send us some notes, and we'll experience it together. And our next listener mail comes from Jenny. And Jenny has some questions about a recent Star Wars story that she read. She says, hey guys, I'm looking forward to your interview with Mr. Karpyshyn. I just finished Path of Destruction last week, and I have to say, it's now on my short list of favorite Star Wars novels. I love the way he conjured vivid images through his descriptions. He gives you just enough to visualize without bogging the story down in petty details. I particularly enjoyed the lightsaber duels he describes. Duels are sometimes hard to imagine. Unless you have a background in martial arts, the writer's ability to paint that picture through his depictions can make or break an action scene in a novel. At times I felt I was actually watching a movie, and that's saying a lot. I often count the number of pages I have left in a book, but I was too spellbound by the plot in this novel to care how many pages I had left. I enjoyed it so much I didn't want it to end. Path of Destruction is full of references to the Dark Lords and the Knights of the Old Republic games. If you enjoyed KOTOR as much as I did, these references add dimension to the narrative. They invoke the atmosphere and mood found on Corbin in the KOTOR games. I was wondering if you could let him know how much I enjoyed his novel and ask him one question for me. Well, he mentioned that Darth Bane learned Vapod. I read Shatterpoint by Matthew Stover a few months ago. In his novel, Stover said that Mace Windu created Vapod. If Path of Destruction takes place in the Old Republic era, how was Bane able to use a form that wasn't invented until 1,000 years later? Was its mention in Path of Destruction an oversight, or did I misunderstand? It's also possible that Stover's mention of Vapod in Shatterpoint was a blunder. I am just starting to read the Star Wars EU, so I am far from being any sort of expert on the subject. Well, Jenny, unfortunately, we had taped the interview with Drew before we got your email. However, J. Shepard, did send your email on to Drew, and he replied. And here's what he says, quoting, ugh. The quote is accurate. I whiffed on this. I don't know if they're planning to fix it in subsequent editions, such as the paperback, or if they're just going to leave it, but I really didn't mean to use Vapod there. I'm actually going to talk about this and other continuity issues on my blog at StarWars.com the next time I post, which won't be for another couple of weeks, but feel free to say I admit it was a mistake. I meant to use Juyo, but my fingers don't always type what my brain is thinking. So he meant to say Juyo.
Another lightsaber form.
Exactly. Well, that's interesting that even the experts, the folks that are creating the material themselves, are not infallible. Makes me feel better about us. And we do have one voicemail. This one from Indiana Jim. Now, if you listened to the show last week, you know that we got an email from Dustin. Not Dustin Roberts. The other Dustin. And he kind of did a one-man interpretation of Yoda's theme. So here's Jim.
Hey, guys. This is Indiana Jim, host of the As Yet Untitled podcast and contributor in exile to Michael and Evo's podcast. Just want to let you guys know that you are doing a terrific job with the podcast. Keep up the good work, and I really like the Yoda's theme, you know, song. So with that in mind, do 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 do
do do do do do do do do
do do do do do do do We've had a couple the past couple weeks. We're not really looking for those types of entries. Again,
I have a feeling that we're going to be getting more of them, though.
Yes.
That's it for listener mail this week. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. Another show in the can, or in the canon.
Make sure you send us those emails so you can hop in on our contest for the top 10 by Halloween. We want full name, address, phone number to podcast@theforce.net with something along the lines of top 10 in the subject line.
Yeah, go ahead and send that out again, podcast@theforce.net. We will start drawing a winner, one winner every day for 10 straight days starting Monday. That's November 13th. We want to say a big thank you to Drew Karpyshyn, and he'll be back next week for part two of that interview.
And remember to keep getting in contact with us with your Star Wars tales or just general feedback. You can do that several different ways. You can email us at podcast@theforce.net, leave us a voicemail at 330-871-4TFN, or if you're on Skype, and no reason you shouldn't be, at ForceCast. Or you can head on over to our dedicated forums, where, of course, we are going to be all day Saturday for the Star Wars in HD Marathon.
That's going to be it for us. We have some music for you to share, sent in by our good friend,
Yo.
I'm sorry. Yes, he even says it's pronounced Yo. Yo Horsley from the band Little Horse. Hope you enjoy this. This is Lando Explains. For the Force Cast, I'm Jason.
And I'm Pete.
And remember,
the Force will be with you. Always.
You came to my city, your life has changed completely.
And she's the rebel spy.
But just like you, I made some choices. We all have lost our voices. Against the Empire here in the sky. Money was once the only answer. Now times have changed me so. Betray you, I would never.
galaxy could never know. But now that times are changing, we'll do some rearranging. I'll miss you a lot. I got to say what I got, 'cause there are people here who respected me for years. Just give me some time, we'll get you back. And if you still think I'm a traitor for dealing with Lord Vader, then you don't understand. You've not considered consequences of raising my defenses against the Empire and its iron hand. But now that times are changing, we'll do some rearranging. I'll miss you a lot. I got to save what I got, 'cause there are people here who've respected me for years. Now just give me some time, we'll get you back. Until then, I'm gonna your land for Jabba's we will soon exchange. But now that times are changing, we're gonna do some rearranging. I'll miss you a lot. I got to save what I got. 'Cause there are people here respecting me for years. Just give me some time, we'll get you back. Times are changing, we'll do some rearranging. Some time will get you back.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.